Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Tēnā koutou nau mai, hare mai, welcome to Educating for Social Change, ko Victoria Kuedaho. Educating for Social Change is brought to you by the Wellington Workers Educational Association. The Wellington WEA supports adult and community education that promotes a just and equitable society in accordance with Te Tiriti o Waitangi. Joining me for this program are two people from the Netherlands who are taking Educating for Social Change very seriously and have found a unique way to do it. Floris van Hees and Eva Smits, also known as Sailors for Sustainability, are two Dutchmen sailing around the world in search of solutions to the environmental and social challenges that the Earth and the societies on it face. Kia ora, welcome to both of you.
Thank you very much for having us, Victoria.
Thank you.
Okay, well, look, let's start at the beginning. How did the idea of circumnavigating the world in a sailboat in order to bring attention to environmental issues, how did it come about? Are you both mad keen sailors? Well, you have to be mad keen sailors.
One of us was, and that's Ivar. Whereas I was not used to sailing at all, but Eva convinced me that that was the best way to travel the world. We both had a dream of seeing more of the world. And Eva was already living on a sailboat at the time. And he said, we can just take my house around. Plus, it'll be the most sustainable way of traveling because we'll just use the wind. So that was the start for the sailing part. But then what made us do what we do, which is look for sustainable solutions all around, is a fundamental understanding as we look deeper into issues of biodiversity loss, pollution, climate change. We understood that fundamental change is actually necessary. And from hearing so much negativity, you can become depressed and feel powerless. So we thought we should change and bring a positive message, look for things that are actually working and spread the news about that so people can take that as an example and use it in their own lives to make changes.
Okay, well, I understand, Ivar, okay, you're the yacht man, the sailor. So you renovated a classic sailboat originally built in 1965.
Correct, yes.
So before you could start, you had to get the boat seaworthy. What was involved?
Yeah, so I've been sailing all my life, thanks to my parents who took us on family holiday with a sailboat as well. And it was a dream of mine since I was very young to own a boat and sail around the world. And I bought Lucy Para, the boat that we are now on, when I was 30, and I didn't have a lot of money. But I fell in love with her classical lines, her strong steel hull, and the very seaworthy yacht that has been circumnavigating the world already. But it was in a very derelict state, but I could buy it. And I started the renovation, which took not 5, like I initially hoped it would take, but more like 12 years. So it was a whole long haul refit. But it was very rewarding to try to basically lengthen the lifetime of the boat. And everything that I changed and later on Flores helped, and a lot of people helped, family and some professionals too. And every step of the way, you realize you're making it better. And that's very rewarding. And obviously, we also checked insulation, renewable energy, and water maker. So we try to, really use the elements to propel ourselves.
Mm. So it started off with just the idea that you would travel, but then it evolved into a much more proactive project about educating for social change.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we lived our lives in Amsterdam and we were both in corporate jobs, more or less, I was an engineer, Floris is a legal background, is a lawyer, and we felt we we were not contributing enough to society. So we left our comfy lives in Amsterdam for this unknown adventure. And we realized that sailing around the world is great, but we wanted to do more. We wanted to show solutions to all these challenges that we so desperately need, because we felt right now in this time in day and age, when there are so much issues haunting us more clearly by the day almost, we seem to lack this positive perspective of what to do about it in a comprehensive way. So we try to focus on successful stories that have actually been implemented already. And every country has different success stories, and that's something we can learn from.
Okay, well, tell us about some of the first successful stories you encountered.
Yeah, we started out sailing to Germany, actually, our neighbor country. And right there was a shop that was the first of its kind in Germany when it started 3 years before we got there, which was a zero waste shop. And they had everything in bulk and mostly locally sourced. You bring your own containers. And with that, I mean, that's a practical side of it, but with that came a whole philosophy of thinking about your footprint and your waste and the packaging that is often wasteful and goes to landfills. So it made us, right from the start, very conscious of how we would provision for our boat and how we could contribute to getting more locally sourced things and minimizing waste.
Mm. Well, that recycling or zero waste, I know, is a very, very strong concept in Germany, where they are very obsessive about sorting their waste. Is the same true in the Netherlands? Is waste a big thing?
I think what we've seen after that shop is those types of shops popping up in more countries. So in the Netherlands, it was also a big thing. There are a lot of people in a very small space, but a lot of the waste is burnt. So it doesn't go to landfill, where it's very in your face, sort of, much unlike here, where you're constantly reminded when you throw something in that bin labeled landfill that you're not getting rid of it, you're just placing it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And you're placing it with other people that live close to that landfill or in nature. So I think we came from a background of not caring too much about the garbage because it's burnt anyway and heat is produced from it, or even electricity. But that made us think right away, it's like, that's not a great way of dealing with our waste, because we should start by reducing waste, avoiding it altogether where we can.
Especially as we now are so aware of the contribution to the increasing carbon levels.
Absolutely. And on carbon levels, obviously, the energy system is producing the majority of the greenhouse gases around the globe. And the amount of renewable energy projects we've been encountering is very, very encouraging. Wind energy is very big in Denmark. We focused on an island in Denmark, Samsø, where the community got together and created a company where everybody participated in. And everybody joined the discussions about where to place these naughty wind turbines. And they did it. Everybody agreed on a specific site to do that. And everybody profited both financially and from the energy now.
When you say everybody profited, the community profited directly?
Yeah, of course, per rata. I mean, the more you invested in the project, the more you get out of it. But everybody participated. And so instead of seeing the negative sides of the wind turbines, because everybody was in it, they felt positively about turning them. They see the wind turbines turning and they said, that's energy and money in my pocket. So so the technology is there. In Denmark, we learned that it's mostly about the way you implement it together with the community. It can work.
Mm-hmm. And Floris, you are coming, a new sailor. Well, not so new now, but because you've been sailing now for 5 years. But with your background, do you see things differently from a legal perspective?
I do in some sense that those projects grab my attention. There was an example in Britain. We met a lady who gave up her job as a lawyer because she thought, actually, the earth is in need of a good lawyer and there isn't one. And why doesn't the earth have rights that are defended? Maybe I should take that role upon me. So she did that. She sold her house. She quit her job to promote the crime of ecocide. She said the large-scale destruction of environmental systems should become an international crime, just like genocide is a crime or war crimes or crimes against humanity. We are destroying our planet, the one planet we have that we live on, that we need to feed ourselves. So she started lobbying governments and international bodies to make that happen. And she got really far until she passed away 2 years ago. We met her as this very, very energetic, well-spoken person. She touched our lives very much. And when we heard about her passing, it shook us. And she keeps inspiring us also because we see how much one person can actually achieve. Her movement lives on. Countries are now adopting resolutions in their parliaments for this to be investigated or even adopt national laws about ecocide. And it's still an ongoing discussion on an international level.
So this is having this established as a legal principle then allows for the state mechanism to address things like degradation of the environment rather than wait for somebody to protest.
Correct. It can, if it is implemented at an international level, countries or companies or individuals could be prosecuted for damaging the environment on a large scale. They would be criminally held liable.
Mm. Now, that's a very interesting development, and I think perhaps one worth following. Now, I met you, of course, at because you were giving a speech at the Sustainability Trust, which is the Sustainability Trust. It's an environmental conservative organization, conservation organization based in Foresters Lane in Wellington. A great place. I think I've mentioned before, it's a really great place to get prisons for people that you don't feel guilty about, because it's got, the soaps and various things to help you make your life more environmentally sound. And they also offer a service to give people advice to make their homes more environmentally safe and sound. And I only found out recently is that you cannot recycle the bottle tops of milk bottle tops, that they just get thrown out and go in the landfill. However, the Sustainability Trust will collect your milk bottle tops. So that was good. Anyway, you guys were giving a talk in March telling about what you were doing. And you mentioned that you were looking at the different projects through the lens of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. So how does that work?
Yes. Just to say, we since we left the Netherlands 5 years ago, we've been traveling through 25 countries and we have documented 50 solutions. So now we're lucky to be here in New Zealand, and we love to share the stories that we have encountered with as many as people as possible. And we were very glad and grateful that Sustainability Trust gave us the opportunity to hold this talk. And obviously, there's a lot of people thinking about sustainability these days, happily. The United Nations is doing a lot of work there. They have developed the 17 Sustainability Development Goals, and they are quite detailed and maybe a bit complicated to understand. So we have tried to make the concrete examples that we encounter and link them to one or more of these Sustainable Development Goals, just to help people understand a bit what it entails and how it could look like.
So the 17 goals, which are a continuation of the Millennial Goals, and they are under a variety of headings, from housing, the environment, education, transport, life on land, life on water. Of course, you get to see that firsthand. And climate action, peace and justice, all of those things. So, how are you grouping the projects that you're looking at?
The way we've done it is so. This was actually before we thought about our project. We thought about what is sustainability for us, and we grouped it in different themes that people can also understand. So nutrition, for example, or energy and transport, and a lot of them, a lot of the solutions we end up describing, they fit into different categories. For example, take the zero waste example. That reduces pollution, but it's also an economic factor because you're supporting the local community. It's also sort of a community project. But what we then do is we describe this story and we add the logos of the Sustainable Development Goals and say, this project of the zero waste shop, for example, contributes to the following goals. So people understand, oh, these goals are not something abstract or something academic, but they translate into very practical examples.
So what sort of response are you getting as you travel the world from people?
Well, overwhelmingly positive, I should say. I think we obviously meet a lot of sailors. They're very interested in what we do. But most notably, we meet a lot of people in the countries where we are. Everybody we've contacted about visiting them and interviewing them, because we make both articles and mini videos, mini documentaries. Everybody actually is very eager to get on and to make themselves available. People feel appreciated. Sometimes they've been doing something for 30 years. Like a food force pioneer, and he was very actually eager to get his story out via us.
Tell us some more about that project.
This was in Brazil, and everybody thinks about Brazil as this country where all the forest is being burned down. It's going very, very poorly, which is also true. But we also encountered very positive projects, like this guy, who started out 30 years ago on a very barren piece of land that was deforested. And the soil was degraded because of the monocultures that were run on it. And he started planting native trees. The rain came back. And then he started planting food crops in a smart way. So he could harvest three-dimensional yield from wood, citrus fruit, cacao, vegetables, all kinds of trees, bananas. And it was really like a jungle with birds and insects and... But very productive, and a lot of everything by biodiversity, maintaining biodiversity as a key to a great yield, and working with nature instead of against it.
I know you. There's not any. This is a big question, but you know, here you have this really positive project happening in Brazil, and then you have all of this. This terrible deforestation, destruction happening. It seems like the little projects, how much power do they have against the big destruction? I mean,
I think that's exactly our mission, is to give them more power. So with every project we visit and describe, we will first sketch the problem and say, but hold on, there's a solution. So, and we need to scale up these solutions. These are proven solutions. They work here, but they can work in different parts. And this is what you can do also to help achieve and scale up those projects, because it is David versus Goliath in many parts. But if we as a community take those examples, let them educate us, and scale them up, then we have a chance.
Now, have you seen any projects, any examples of projects that have been scaled up successfully?
Yeah, I think talking about food forests, the concept of food forest, like this guy was
as far as I know, the first who started it 30 years ago. But now they're popping up everywhere in recent years. There's Facebook groups, and every country we visit now is having some of that going. So we have internet, and we can learn very quickly from how it's done. And a lot of people jump on it. And I think it's such a great time we are now in, because we have been living through all these effects of our ancient way of doing things. And it has now reached a state where we have reached crisis level. So I love the saying, like, as the smoke in the global theater thickens, the exit signs will shine brighter, which means that the problems of deforestation are as old as humanity almost. But now we realize that is a problem. We need to do something about it. And hey, we can. And then a lot of people start doing it. So this is the time for action. And that's why it's so important that these great ideas are spreading and people act on it.
Mm. And now, you started off, you were traveling on your savings, but now you are supporting yourselves through sponsorship, through funding from partners, and, you know, things like giving speeches where individuals give a small amount of money. How tell us a little bit about your funding.
Yeah, well, everything you said is true.
We are an NGO, so funding is always a challenge, and we still use our savings, especially when it comes to boat maintenance, because that's a big chunk of the budget when we stop for maintenance. So it's savings, it's small contributions from the community. For example, we make videos and we put them first on Patreon, and people can become a patron and give $3 or so per video. They get it for 2 weeks exclusive, and then we spread it for the whole world. We write some articles and we try to get as many partners to publish our articles. So that's sometimes a challenge as well when you're traveling to make contacts. So if listeners have ideas, we are happy. We are writing now for 2 sailing magazines, a Dutch one and an English one. And we try to partner also with organizations to spread our stories, to get broader reach. So we will make our stories available, for example, for a newsletter. And some organizations have a themed newsletter, so it could be about construction, and then our stories that deal with environmental friendly ways of building could go in that newsletter.
Well, okay, so this is a plug now for your website. If you want to find out more about your project, where do people go?
The first one is our website, which is sailorsforsustainability.nl. It's all in English, which has our stories, our videos, and our links also to all the projects we've visited. So if people read about a project and they want to learn more about it, they can also access that there. Then we are on most social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn, also as Sailors for Sustainability, and on Vimeo and YouTube.
Right. Well, look, it has been a delight to have you both join me for this podcast, Ivar and Floris. You've been listening to Educating for Social Change. And, gentlemen, you take Educating for Social Change very seriously. Have you last words?
Yes, please jump on this train of sustainability. Everybody has a role to play. And everybody can influence others to do more. And this is the time of action. And of course, we need systemic change, but that can only be achieved if enough people are actually supporting it. So politicians also have a mandate to take more action.
And don't underestimate your own role. You as an individual are sometimes part of a family, and you can lead that family into a more sustainable path. You might be a worker or an educator, and as that, you have a role. You have a role as a citizen. So think about your different roles, and everywhere you can make change.
Oh, thank you very much, Ivar and Floris, the Sailors for Sustainability. You've been listening to Educating for Social Change, brought to you by the Wellington Workers Educational Association. You can find our podcasts on the Wellington WEA website. We are also broadcast on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. every second Sunday at 7 p.m. Wellington Access Radio is a community radio station which gets support from New Zealand On Air. Ko Victoria Kwaida ho. Until next time, ka kite anō.
Can't you hear the ocean cry, calling out to be revived? Take a step back, realize we all need to make a play. Reverse effects of common man, take a moment, open your eyes. We're taking our time, can't keep running, running. Take the water into your veins. I'm feeling a change that is coming, coming. The sooner that we understand, just a drop of rain. When nothing grows, make a choice to sink or swim. Feel the blue are turning black. How did we get so off track? Across our seven seas, we're taking our time. Can't keep running, running. Take the water into your veins. I'm feeling a change that is coming. The sooner that we understand, just a drop of rain. That's all I am. Am all the same. We have the power to make a way if we move together as one. Oh, oh. There's no time to waste. Actions are louder. Don't
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.